This video is brought to you by a product I use weekly, Harry's.
Without further ado, let's get into Fargo.
Oh my God. Yeah. Again, like I said, I have not seen a ton of Coen Brothers films, but this is, as you said, early Coen Brothers.
And, yeah.
This is a way to, for me at least, get introduced. I mean, there was so many different elements I appreciated about this film. I like too that this film was, I mean, we know it's a true story, but I like that it was really grounded in reality in terms of like these everyday conversations. And it was just so much based around like just conversations around food and stuff like this. And like, I loved Frances McDormand's character, and I liked too that we didn't get introduced to her until about 40 minutes into the film.
Yeah,
I thought that was an interesting choice. But I love right away, she's so intuitive, so resourceful, so smart, and you see that right away. But like I said, there's so much darkness in this film, which I really wasn't expecting. Because I didn't know anything about it just in general. But then like her and her husband, just you immediately identify right away. And you know, that relationship right there is like the kind of, like I said, the glimmer of light. And it's like the levity from all the darkness that's going around. And look, everyone else in the film was phenomenal. William H. Macy was absolutely terrific in terms of his character. I understand what he was going through. Like, I get it. I've been a pushover in certain areas of my life before, and like people walking over me. I get what he was going through. Felt the need in terms of feeling desperation, never to the point of this extent. So I understand where he was coming from, but I don't sympathize to what he did or agree at all with what he did. Like, that is insane. And I get it. The whole plan was supposed to be nonviolent.
And they did a good job setting us up to go like, oh, I get you to a point. And then as soon as that point tipped, there was about 7 minutes of movie where I was like, oh, this poor guy.
And again, like, his plan was, as we all know, it was supposed to be nonviolent. He was going to get his wife back and he was going to get half the money. No foul, but it's like, dude, your wife was going to be mentally scarred.
Yeah.
Your kid was going to be mentally scarred. You get half the money.
So in fairness,
like,
I don't think you fully understood where he's coming from in those seven minutes, but there were 7 minutes where you understand how a character could do that.
Yeah.
And then there's a tipping point.
But again, like you said, they laid out right there in the first few minutes, like, hey, this guy is a pushover. He's literally in everything he does. People just walk all over him. So from that perspective, you feel a little empathy and sympathy towards him, but still not to the point where you're going to agree with what this ludicrous plan, even to the point where the guys who were about to do the kidnapping plan, Steve Buscemi, they're trying to talk him out of it. And they're about to be paid 40 grand to do a simple job. And they're like, dude,
you could just ask
ask your rich father-in-law for the damn money.
And then we see him clearly have no respect for him because he's such a pushover, which I love the scene sequencing.
Yeah.
Like you mentioned us not meeting Frances McDormand. I thought they did a really good job giving us what you think is the story and then pivoting. Even though it's based on a true story, there were moments that I was like, okay, well, intuitively, if it's true, someone had to survive to tell us. But I loved how there would be just a random character like the Big Mouth that would be necessary, but the movie didn't have like a David Fincher thriller thing where it was like, ooh, what's the mystery? Instead, it had this like novel thriller where it's like, oh my God, how can things get worse? Oh my God, it's escalating. It didn't feel like it was uniquely paced. I really like that things just kind of came at you as opposed to like some of the more formulaic stuff. That way, when something formulaic happened, like, oh, I know he's a coward, he's going to drive away, that felt more earned and more like a character arc. And the idea that all of this happened just made it so much more terrifying. Like, I knew more people had to die because otherwise they wouldn't make a movie about one murder. Like, you know, unfortunately, we live in a world where murders happen all the time.
Yeah.
So how bad had it get? And then the wood chipper? Like, I mean, that's why, you know, you make a movie.
But I mean,
an image.
Yeah, you called that too with Peter Stormare's character. Like, you know, that dude is the silent, escalating, crazy
Never trust
type.
A silent hitman.
Yeah, I mean, like, and you had that scene too with Steve Buscemi who was like, dude, do you talk at all? Like, and then you had that scene where the state trooper like comes out and he's just like, he's got that deadpan stare. And then the escalation just out of nowhere. And then you got that blood squibs coming out. I mean, that dude was, this is one of the more really scary roles from him. I mean, I've only seen him in a few films, but he scared the shit out of me.
Minority Report. He's so intense. I love Minority Report. But like for me, and I think the lyric is, with that guy that played in Fargo. I think his name is Steve, and I think the lyric refers to Steve Buscemi. I think it's like a Bare Naked Ladies song.
Okay.
I've had that. I've only known Fargo from one song lyric, and I have no idea. I think it's about Steve Buscemi.
Nah.
But I really like that, and again, this feels like it's a screenwriting note, but it's a reality note. I love that it was set in a place where people are so aggressively kind to your face.
Yes.
Because that made the darkness so interesting. Even when things were like, when people are aggressive on the phone, they still sound kinder than anyone has ever sounded in LA.
Oh, definitely. Well, also, too, I think you said it best. Life is so fragile. I mean, you got to be so careful. I mean, this was very apparent, like, wrong place, wrong time. You had that state trooper pulling them over. You had the people just driving by, and you were like,
The guy at the toll booth. Really
yeah, and then the guy at the toll booth, because he saw him with his face shot off. And then, you know, it just, this film did such a good job with suspense and tension. You're like, when Steve Buscemi was carrying that state trooper, you're like, holy shit, like, just get him out of the way so those people can drive by safely.
And then
when he was driving after them, it's like, then I thought, again, this film really did a good job of subverting expectations too.
Consistently.
You know? Yeah. And so, because I thought they just pulled to the side and got out in darkness, and then it's like, oh, no. They were like panicking, understandably so. I would have been freaking out in that if someone's chasing me after they just done a cold-blooded murder and then they're chasing me and I'd seen it and I'm trying to get out of there, I'd be, and it's snowing too, and
the,
you know,
darkness,
I mean,
of those roads, yeah, like, you can
it's
only
already,
see
it's already hard enough to drive in snowy weather like right. that, and now someone's chasing you who just committed a murder
and
like,
your headlights are like 5 feet in front of you, and you're only seeing
and now
that.
You're like this with the wheel,
and they were
so,
kids,
yeah,
so
I mean,
they're new to driving on
yeah,
top of, like,
I mean, oh man, but again, the subversion of expectations, very, very well done.
The Deacons Cohen combo visually.
Wow. Yeah.
What a film.
Yeah. No, I mean, there were so many shots too that were interesting as well. Like, you had that one shot Frances McDormand, right? Her and her husband, like, after they just had that 3 a.m. breakfast or whatever. One shot where she's leaving the kitchen, going out the door,
and he's
then
just going about
like
his day.
It's just like a split shot there, but it's still one shot, but like.
Split by the home.
Split by the home. I just, that was.
There's also, I really love the visceral, we both were like, what's he working on? And then you hear the wood chipper. And there was a moment I winced because it sounded like gnarled, like it was just this gross sound. I didn't even know what it was yet, and it was affecting me. And then they turned the corner and I was like, oh, way worse than I could have imagined.
Yeah.
I assumed like chainsaw, like something, you know.
Yeah, I had a feeling he was, I mean, we both had a feeling he was doing something to mutilate the
bodies.
But
I love how good the movie was at making us both go like, and then the reveal is more traumatic. Like the movie did that a lot where it was like, hey, your imagination, and we're like, you know, 2024, the world's messy, so we've seen a lot of movies and things, and then it still was more graphic.
Yeah.
Like, this was very traumatic and intense. I can't believe it's true. So many people died. I see why it's legendary. Like, this, I can't believe this movie was an hour and a half.
No, it was paced and amazingly. And also, too, dude, I feel so bad for William H. Macy's son.
I hope that kid got all of his grandpa's money.
Oh, yeah.
For therapy alone.
I mean, obviously, money does not replace losing your father because he's a dumbass and evil.
Losing your whole family.
And then, losing your whole family, basically. I mean, the psychological scars that kid,
and he seems so on the edge of having trauma anyway. Like, he's like not doing good in school. He just wants to play hockey. Like, he's on that edge, and now he's the next Peter Stormare.
But again, I love that this movie just does a good job just painting, like, again, grounding stuff to reality, having these conversations. And again, there were so many scenes too where it was just visual storytelling.
Yes,
like, you have the scene of them in the motel having sex with the women, and then. It's very quick. It's like 30 seconds.
It establishes
less,
in your.
But it shows that they know who these two guys are, and there was no dialogue. And then later on, when she meets with them, Frances McDormand, she can identify this very strange guy who's uncircumcised. Like, okay, now I, because I was wondering, like, okay, it was still cool to see the scene. But I'm like, why did we see
I thought
this?
It was there to establish that Buscemi has connections. So I was already thinking, like, plot-wise, like, oh, he said that he can get women. He's proving he can get women. I thought it was going to be, like, him showing off to Stormare.
Right.
I love that it was later, like, they were more witnesses, because that makes sense for a detective story. You need to have witnesses to question. And, like, it was great going, like, why are they showing this scene? Oh, subverting expectation. And I also think it was really, really cool to have scenes that would have been potentially cut from other films today. Like, There's a nest in the 80s that I think they show more supporting characters more. I think that, like, have you seen the Lethal Weapon movies?
Of course.
I always love use the those. Example of, like, the cat in the Lethal Weapon movies with Murtaugh's family, I feel like has a better arc than most characters in movies today. Because that cat is, like, on the top of a fridge, and the fridge has an end apartheid thing, and then the second film has that. The cat, like, is rescued. Like, there's so many elements of the cat. And then in the first film, in the second film, Riggs has to save a cat from that explosion. And I'm always thinking about how, like, that shows the domesticity of Riggs growing. And, like, that's a supporting character that's an animal. And nowadays, a lot of movies are like, how can we cut the fat? How can we make this cheaper? How can we trim? And this movie has so many scenes where it's like them two laying in bed at the end was so necessary for my sanity.
For sure.
And the scenes of them, like, doing just day-to-day stuff made everything else more horrific. It made the I don't know if I've ever thought as much about how fragile life is. And I think that's because we saw how precious life is, and her dialogue about what a beautiful day. That was because of the Minnesota nice. That was because of the beautiful, tranquil scenes that I don't feel like we get to rest in as much. And that could just be, you know, everyone has a nostalgia for the past. But I do feel like movies in the 80s and 90s spent a little more time with people.
Thrilled to be partnering with a brand I've been using for nearly 2 years now, and that's Harry's Razors. I'm generally more drawn to anything that goes against the norm, and Harry's does just that in the grooming world. They saw the high prices in the industry and decided to blaze their own trail with quality and affordability. I keep a beard, but whenever you see these cheeks and the neck clean, then that's the work of Harry's right there. Keeps my wife happy, and Harry's makes it effortless. They're precision blades that cut smoothly with less drag, making every shave satisfying. And yes, it's versatile for other areas too, you know what I mean? So as a Harry's devotee, I can vouch for their value. You can experience unparalleled comfort and quality in your grooming routine, where exceptional craftsmanship meets affordability, making a smart choice for a top-notch shave without breaking the bank. Their kits and value packs for shaving are unbeatable, but Harry's is not just about shaving. Again, they offer top quality, thoughtfully designed grooming products, including shampoo, conditioner, and amazing body wash, without the premium price. Quality, affordability, that's a thesis of this. Now these I actually pulled right from my own bathroom. I regularly use their 5-blade razor with a nice weighted handle and their foaming shave gel. Man, this ball, it is a game changer. I just like the feel of it. Now I have to commit to keeping this in my hand the whole time, because I'm not going to go to the bathroom in the middle of shooting this. The handles, they feel perfectly balanced, and the razor's sleek design is a classy addition to my bathroom. And the quality of the shave, unparalleled. Gotta reiterate, keep part of my weekly grooming ritual, because their entire range of products fits seamlessly into my routine. Definitely no reshoots here. Their German engineer blades are durable, and refill plans are economical. Rarely use the word economical, but I'm using it now. Plus, their commitment to high customer satisfaction and no risk trial makes Harry's a no-brainer. This gel really does feel good. Let me say once more, choosing Harry's means quality and affordability. By grabbing your $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/rejects, you're not only getting a great deal, but you're also supporting this channel. That's harrys.com/rejects for your $3 trial set. Stay sharp and embrace the extraordinary with Harry's. Till next time, Reject Nation. Till next time.
Absolutely. No, that's a great point. And I mean, that's what I loved about her character. I'm like, you just literally witnessed this monster mutilating bodies in a wood chipper. And also too, like, I've also too watched that. I can't remember the name of the show. It's the one where they try to solve the crimes on Crime TV. I'm blanking right now. But when I watch those shows and they're Forensic Files. Great show, but obviously it's horrific to watch. But when I'm watching that, it's more for the science is why I watch it, and like how they it's like I just find it fascinating when they discover like how they discover the crimes and all that. I'm like, wow, fascinating. But then when I'm actually like thinking about it, I'm like, I just don't understand like the psychoticness. Why do people do these things?
I think it's why Dexter is such an interesting character.
I've never seen that show.
Well, you have to be a little, I think, no disrespect to any forensic analysis in there. But like, I think there has to be a level of disconnect that can be a slippery slope. Yeah. I think in order to see that much blood, a part of you has to be able to remove the humanity from it. And I think that like Dexter fascinates me, because what if you were loved blood and you did that, but then like, you know, you realize there's a reason you love blood. And like, this is interesting because it's the other direction. Frances McDormand is so sweet. And I love seeing John Carroll Lynch as a warm character, because he's often played as so cold, and like he's often in that like dead-eyed mode, and he's so good here. And I think he was in Drew Carey Show. But like, he's so good at both things, just like the Coen brothers.
And that was such a great scene too, like having seen that guy just mutilate and put bodies in the wood chipper. Like, I'm a very nice human being. You're a very nice human being. I have a feeling we wouldn't have had that same conversation. It's like, I see no humanity in you.
Oh, he would have been shot in the head.
Yeah, I'm not even having a conversation.
She shot him in the leg and brought him in.
This is dead silence. But like to see that humanity in her and like to have a try and understand, like, why did you do this?
And William H. Macy might never have gotten caught if she'd killed him.
That's
we would have killed him.
Yeah.
And then it would have been like there would be no justice.
Very true.
So that's why you should have been like, yeah. I'd have killed him.
That's true. No, she was great. Well, let's read off a couple facts really quickly here from Fargo. Some movie trivia facts.
Yeah, there's got to be plenty. This movie's legendary for a reason.
I'm sure there's going to be plenty.
I am so tired from that 90 minutes. Like, my body was tense from minute seven.
Oh, my God. The Coen brothers just excelled in this film with tension.
Dude, you got to watch No Country, man.
Oh, no. I want to see... After Big Lebowski and Burn After Reading, I wanted to see more, but
you've seen their comedies.
Yeah. now I've seen some of the dark-ass shit. Yeah. Although there was some good...
levity moments.
There was some good levity moments,
like,
for sure. Okay, so the snowplow that drives past the motel at the end of the film was not part of the script. Signs in the area warned motorists not to drive through due to filming, but a state employee ignored them.
it was good ambiance.
Yeah. Joel Coen had Frances McDormand and John Carroll Lynch conceive a backstory for their characters to get the feel of them. They decided that Norm and Marge met while working on the police force, and when they were married, they had to choose which one of them had to quit. Since Marge was a better officer, Norm quit and took up painting.
I love that.
That's cool. That's awesome. Very cool. I like knowing these things after the fact, but not if I when I rewatch
they reveal
it.
Too much.
Yeah. Yeah. True. When Carl Showalter, Steve Buscemi, his character, calls Jerry Lindegard, William H. Macy, for the deal to be done, he tells him 30 minutes and we'll wrap this up. From that moment, the film's running time left is exactly 30 minutes. Christopher Nolan would be so proud.
Genius.
Yeah.
I love that so much.
That's again, like Christopher Nolan, it literally
with his
when
love
he
of time
when he does, like he literally
his Memento shit.
I always like when I hear those things in films, I
next
usually
viewing is great.
Yeah, well,
like,
yeah, exactly. I usually count those things down because it started for me. I don't know about you, but it started for me because I'm just so particular and OCD about those things. For in Galaxy Quest, one of the all-time greatest Star Trek films ever, there's that countdown with when the ship is going to explode from the self-destruct. It was so off the time. It's still a great film. Still one of the best films ever. But that countdown was so off. Let's see. We'll do a few more. This one's a little long, so bear with me, people. William H. Macy begged the directors for the role of Jerry Lindegard. He did two readings for the part and became convinced he was the best man for the role. When the Coens didn't get back to him, he flew to New York where they were starting production and said, and I quote, "I'm very, very worried that you're going to screw up this movie by giving this role to somebody else. It's my role, and I'll shoot your dogs if you don't give it to me." He was joking, of course. Well, I'm glad he said that and didn't shoot their dogs, because I thought he was pretty damn perfect for the role.
Incredible.
He was
incredible.
He was incredible. I got him again. I haven't looked it up. I just know Frances McDormand won the Academy Award for this film. But I got to imagine he was nominated
for
this.
So,
he was so damn good.
Yeah.
I mean, he was that wormy, cowardly pushover. I thought he was perfect in this film. So, again, glad he convinced them and didn't shoot their dog, apparently. All right, I'll do two or three more, and then we'll call it. The role of Carl Showalter was written specifically for Steve Buscemi. Yeah, I got to imagine. Funny
weird
looking guy.
Weird looking
guy.
In nondescript way.
Yeah, Steve Buscemi. Steve Buscemi is like, thanks.
Yeah,
okay,
exactly.
I'll take it. It's a paycheck. I'll take it. Thanks, guys.
And it's so funny how sweet of a guy Steve Buscemi is.
I know.
Volunteer firefighter, like hides it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what an angel of a man.
Very true.
Sorry, I just blew up your spot, Steve Buscemi.
Let's see. William H. Macy stated in an interview that despite evidence to the contrary, he did hardly any ad-libbing at all. Most of his character's stuttering mannerisms were written in the script exactly the way he does them in the film. That's interesting.
Man, those Coen's right.
Yeah, I thought a lot of it was ad-libbing. So, interesting fact.
Especially with the pacing and runtime of the film, I would have assumed.
Yeah. All right, two more. We'll call it. There's only one scene shot on a bright and sunny day. Cinematographer Sir Roger Deakins hated that it was sunny, feeling that it went against the movie's mood. True, because this is a dark-ass film,
really
so I
is.
Could understand his point of view from that. Totally get that. All right, last one. Frances McDormand, looking around for a role as a killer or prostitute, was hesitant to play a pregnant cop And I quote, when I started working on it, I realized it was one of the best gifts that I had ever been given. And we thank you because you were damn so good.
You were the one of the reasons this movie works so well. Yeah, I was so worried for you the entire time.
Oh, yeah. No, and especially at the end there, too. I was like, oh, my God.
On the ice.
I was like, oh, yeah. And also, too, yeah, when she walked over, I was like, oh, my God, please tell me she's not going to fall. Yeah, yeah.
And I, you know, my vendetta-driven ass, I was like, she's going to shoot him and then the ice is going to break. Like, I thought, you know, so like, whoo.
Yeah.
Thank you for having a heart, Francis McDormand, shaking and showing us.
This was such a well-done film. Like, I just want to watch a bunch of Coon.
Dude, you should.
Yeah. Well, hopefully.
Tell him what you want him to watch in the comments below.
Yeah, save him for you guys. I promise.
You can share in his experience of the trauma we just went through.
Yes.
No Country. Hopefully someone else hasn't seen it.
And also, too, if you guys are listening to us on Spotify or what's the other one we were on?
Apple.
Thank you so much. See, we're a good team.
There we go. We got this.
Please leave us a ring. We would appreciate it.
Yes. And there was a couple movies at the top we both realized we hadn't seen. So also like Thin Red Line, we both haven't seen. What was
Thin
the other
Red
one?
Line and Platoon.
Platoon, never seen. So please leave a comment below if you want us to watch those, because that helps Greg and us know what else you guys be interested in seeing. So please leave a like. Please comment. Please share this video. We love making these for y'all. Hope you enjoyed us enjoying but being traumatized by Fargo for the very first time. Much love, Reject Nation. We'll see you soon.